Many patients are upset to learn that doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore.
National Review columnist Wesley Smith talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's a real shame because the Hippocratic Oath protects patient safety. The speech I will give at the conference will describe the consequences of violating Hippocratic values in healthcare and the things that can occur in the healthcare system if we move away from Hippocratic medicine to a more utilitarian bioethics.
You can meet and hear Wesley Smith making the case for the Hippocratic Oath at the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Reuters recently ran a piece asking and answering the question, does Islamic State still pose a threat? What has become of the Islamic State, known as ISIS or ISIL, depending on where it was basing its operations? Is that mean the end of jihad, of global jihad, or of other organizations that could easily slide in and take the place of the Islamic State? We're going to be talking about that piece from Reuters and answering the question, is the Islamic State still a global threat? Raymond Ibrahim joins us. He's the Judith Friedman Rosen Writing Fellow at the Middle Eastern East Forum and author of several books, including his latest Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. Raymond, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you again.
How would you describe the current state of the Islamic State?
Well, basically, from a material or physical or, if you will, temporal level, it's weakening, withdrawing, retreating, as a lot of analysts and governmental officials have announced. From an ideological, metaphysical level, or insofar as how many people are sympathetic to it, like-minded Islamists, it's getting stronger. And I think that's the whole dichotomy we have to understand, which you alluded to, which is basically that as a finite temporal organization, the Islamic State is what it is, and it can grow stronger, it can get weaker, it can get attacked, it can retreat, withdraw, et cetera. And that's what we've been seeing most recently, including with that Reuters piece. But as an ideology that was not in any way, shape, or form created by ISIS, rather ISIS is a reflection of that ideology, and this ideology has been around with us for nearly 1,400 years, and that's why we see these different physical manifestations. You know, before ISIS, it was called Al-Qaeda. ISIS are basically was an offshoot from Al-Qaeda in that region. And we still have all these other different like-minded groups, some who've even offered allegiance to it, such as Boko Haram in Nigeria and Al-Shabaab in Somalia and all kinds of different groups. So really that's the breakdown. You know, ideologically, it's very strong and for good reason. Physically, materially, you can say it's withdrawing, but it can easily pop up again in a new and different guise, as it has always been historically.
Why is it a dangerous mistake to equate the territory that groups like ISIS control with its strength?
Exactly, because when you just focus on territory, basically you're looking at the material, you're looking at time and space type issues. Which can get stronger, weaker, wane, and wax. And so we're seeing ISIS waning in this regard. But if you just look at it from those lens without looking at the more ideological issue at hand, you know, you referenced this book I wrote, Sword and Scimitar, subtitled 14 Centuries of War. And what you find when you look at 14 centuries of conflict between the Islamic world and the Western world, which was then especially considered Christendom, Europe, and so forth, is that ISIS is a mirror reflection of that 14 centuries. You know, we've been told ISIS is an aberration in Islam. It has nothing to do with Islam. If you actually, you know, push aside Islamic doctrine, Quran, and that, and just look at actual history as it was recorded, especially in Islamic primary sources, you will find that you had one wave after another of what we call ISIS, with the beheadings and the crucifixions and the mass sexual enslavement and all that sort of thing, destruction of churches, imposition of jizya, tribute, and et cetera, et cetera. That runs throughout the whole course of nearly 14 centuries. And it's mostly, just like ISIS, it's offensive, meaning that Islam left its home territory and invaded other territories. So, for instance, in the 7th century, when Islam burst out of Arabia, it actually conquered in one century three-quarters of what was then the Christian world. And the people who did this were just like ISIS in every facet, the way they're described. And so when you understand that, then you start realizing, well, ISIS as a temporal group that's focused in Syria and Iraq and it's currently retreating is good news. Yes, it is, but it doesn't really change the long, big picture, which is that these groups continuously keep morphing, keep popping up, and that's because the ideology that they adhere to is not going away anytime soon, and it's been around for nearly 14 centuries.
Does it matter who the leaders are at any given time? I mean, we've had famous names, and sometimes there have been so many that have come and gone, it's hard to remember all of them.
No, and I recall Ayman Zawahiri, the current leader of al-Qaeda, at the time when he was number two leader of al-Qaeda and bin Laden was still the leader, he was asked if bin Laden died. This is before the time he was established dead. In other words, it was about a decade ago. And Ayman just basically said, it really doesn't matter. We are all jihadis in the path of Allah. He basically said what I was saying, and I'm trying to paraphrase, that this is a war that continues until the entire globe is subject to Islamic Sharia. Governance is subject to a caliphate. We are just modest, humble mujahids, basically jihadis in this path, and we will die, we will come and go. I think he even referenced Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, as just another man who was engaged in jihad struggle, who obviously died. And if anything, Islam just continued the jihad. And in fact, that's when the aforementioned conquest I was referring to happened, right after Muhammad died. So it didn't even matter when the chief prophet and chief head of the religion was gone. It still continued doing the jihad and still continued to expand.
Talk briefly about the ability of global jihad to inspire attacks globally without even having to have boots on the ground, so to speak.
Right, and that's why you see all around the world, not just in the Islamic world, you see it in Europe, wherever you have large populations or significant minorities of Muslims, you get these what are called lone wolf attacks. You know, it could be on Europeans, you know, those famous truck attacks and markets in Berlin, Christmas market bombings. But you also see it happening, for example, to the Christian minorities all around the Islamic world. For instance, the Copts of Egypt, Coptic Christians, their churches are continuously either bombed or attacked by mobs and closed and so forth. And all of these are, you know, and it's funny because when these things happen, most recently, I think it was in January, there was an Islamic terrorist bombing of a church in the Philippines, and I believe something like 30 Christian worshipers were killed. It was on a Sunday. And then the Islamic State claimed it. And it's pretty evident that it's hard to say if the Islamic State actually orchestrated it or it's claiming it, you know, in the spirit of, you know, sympathetic cooperation. And the people who did it are also like-minded jihadis who naturally have an allegiance to it and so forth. So there's definitely an interplay between the Islamic State in general and all these attacks that you see. And again, that interplay is not because of some special devotion to the Islamic State or al-Baghdadi, but rather because they both adhere to the same Islamic ideology. And, you know, maybe those who are doing it do see the Islamic State as something to give their allegiance to or not, but they're still all doing the same thing that they believe is required from their Islamic law.
Raymond Ibrahim is the Judith Friedman Rosen Writing Fellow at Middle East Forum. He's author of several books, including his latest Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. You can purchase it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Raymond, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Todd.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to go back to our series, Introducing the Books of the Bible. We are in the Minor Prophets, and we are in some of the most minor of the Minor Prophets in terms of their length, of course. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will introduce us to Habakkuk.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth, You're listening to Issues Etc.